Today, we talk with Eleanor Harari about the idea of becoming self-full. To those of you who wince at the very idea, spoiler alert, taking care of yourself and being on your own side is neither selfish nor does it require selflessness. And to those of you who might be saying, but I have no time for self-care, well, this episode is for you. For all of us, actually, as a lack of self-care and blaming it on time seems to be an epidemic. Eleanor and I dab in some of the science that supports that our overall well-being depends on our ability to make the time to recharge ourselves. We also do a positive psychology role play that I believe will open the door to a world where your wants and needs might even become a sacred priority. In the words of Rabbi Hillel, if I am not for myself, who will be for me? But if I am only for myself, who am I? If not now, when? May this podcast be a catalyst for you to become the better version of you, just bursting to step forward.
You're listening to the Investment of Self podcast, where we uncover ways to reduce dis-ease and live authentically. Welcome. I am Kathy Washburn, your host. I'm a 20-year advanced stage cancer survivor who only recently realized the importance of investing in myself. I created this podcast to connect the work and research of knowledge experts directly to you, the humans their work can help. Welcome, welcome. I'm so excited to have Eleanor Harari today on our podcast. How are you today?
I'm great. Thank you. It's
so
great
to be here. Yes, this is going to be a great conversation. Eleanor and I met through Phoebe Atkinson, who I interviewed on episode 17. She was one of my positive psychology mentors, which I believe she's also one of Eleanor's. Phoebe's on the faculty of Whole Being Institute, where both Eleanor and I went through the positive psychology coaching program, albeit different years. Phoebe being the mad connector that she is, she was noticing how our work had some synergy. And as soon as she introduced me to Eleanor's work, I thought, yes, type C people need self-care. This is a big gap in our world. And we're going to dive deep into that. But before we do, Eleanor, I would love it if you'd like to introduce yourself. Tell us more about what you're doing in the world, who you serve, and anything exciting you'd like to share.
First of all, thank you for having me here. I'm super excited for this opportunity. So yes, I'm Eleanor Harari. I am a positive psychology coach. As you said, I also graduated the certificate from Whole Being Institute. And I work one-on-one with people from all over the world, mostly expats. For those who are not familiar with the term, expats are people that are relocating mostly for work. So not people that immigrated for good, but people that are living temporary in a different country. And also leading workshops. My educational background is actually in psychology, but I never worked as a psychologist. I instead turned to marketing, and this is what I did for many years until COVID arrived and I met positive psychology, and that has transformed my life and certainly my career. Mm-hmm. So that's about me.
I remember watching an interview that you did, and I was so impressed with that, because I think when we first get introduced to psychology, it's the study of what's not going well. And I did a course with a friend of mine who's a grief therapist, and we did a course on hope from the perspective of a coach and a therapist. And we were watching the videos before we went with the course out live. And she said, wow, you make me want to be a coach because you're just so light and airy. And I feel like I'm pulling it down. But I've read many one in particular about a sustainable model of health that includes both, that it really to do both at the same time, you know, to kick up what's wrong and then to focus on the good, to kind of give those wings. So you've got both sides of that, which is really interesting.
Yeah, definitely. I think we need some of both, probably. And maybe, you know, it varies in different times of our life. Sometimes we need more of the coaching and sometimes maybe more of the therapy. Depends on the particular situation, but surely each one of them can bring, you know, different benefits to everyone.
I truly believe that. So just to set the stage a little, Dr. Lydia Tomaszak's book, it's called The Type C Connection. She talks about one of the transformational tools to kind of turn our Type C coping mechanisms on their head is to find our inner guide. Her research shows that a stronger inner guide leads to increased security and confidence, which increases our ability to be in relationship with self, which ultimately leads to healthier relationships with others. So a type C personality often is very others directed. They are conflict resistant. They can really kind of, I use the word contort because that's what I felt like I did most of my life, contort myself to the scenario, always very conscious of other people's feelings and then magically changing myself to meet those needs or what I believed the needs of others. So building a self-identity was a big part of my own transformation. But how do we get there? So what doorway is that self-care? And it was a huge, heavy door for me. It was really hard for me to open that one. And I hear it time and time again in the voices of my clients when they say, I have no time for self-care. I hear it more than anything else in my coaching practice. But with that doorway of inner guide, and we know this takes time. Like it really is a time game. And at some point, we must step into that ownership of time. And I saw you talk about that with the JCC about how time kind of changed for you with different events in your life. Can you share that?
Yeah, sure. I'll be happy to. What I didn't mention before is that I said I live in the Netherlands, but I'm not Dutch. I'm actually Israeli. That has been living here. I'm an expat myself. And I learned firsthand about the importance of self-care after the events of October 7th. So, you know, this day started, it was a Saturday morning, very early, that my husband and I woke up to see the horrific news and, you know, we're watching the horrors as it was happening in real time, which was obviously very shocking and, you know, left us glued to the TV, almost paralyzed, you know, for days. And all my daily habits, all my routines of well-being, such as yoga and meditations and, you know, inspirational reading were all abandoned at once for the sake of watching the news and getting updated all the time and doing only the minimum that was required, you know, for work and for maintaining our house and the family, of course. And during the first days, I was even so overwhelmed that I couldn't express my emotions. I couldn't cry. I just sat in front of the TV, completely shocked. And it was only after I went to a yoga class, to a yin yoga class, that I was able to start processing on the mat, you know, what had happened and start expressing myself. And that was like a light bulb for me. I mean, I realized how important that was for me, how much I needed this to ground me. And that was actually, this yoga class was the first self-care act I did in days after what had happened. And then it took me another 3 weeks to do something recreational. And that was going by myself to an ecstatic dance session. Again, something with movement, you know, to express myself. And that experience was so powerful and infused so much hope and energy in me that I even left the place, you know, motivated to organize a retreat for my fellow Israeli women in my community, because I realized that just as I neglected my self-care because of all the challenges that we were facing and the negativity, they also did the same. And they were also left, you know, drained and feeling drained and exhausted, just like me. And so I decided to do that. They were on board immediately. It was only a 24-hour experience. You know, we went to somewhere beautiful in the nature. I organized it really quickly, arranged a positive psychology workshop and other activities for the mind and the body. And it was incredible. I mean, I was shocked, astonished by the effect of 24 hours, you know, what it did to us and how important it was. We left there feeling recharged, more confident, united, you know, even more upright, standing more upright. It was really a transformational experience in 24 hours. So that's really led me to realize that neglecting this self-care is just not an option, and especially when you're facing adversity.
And it's so often when we're facing adversity that I don't know if it's Maria Sarah or Tal Ben-Shahar that first brought out the and, you know, I can be grieving and I can do something to take care of myself. You know, there really is that both and, not or.
Yeah.
And in your story, and thank you for sharing that. It's remarkable. Like, humanity is remarkable when you can tap into those positive emotions. That work of Barbara Fredrickson is so clear of that broaden and build that's possible when you can get out of the tunnel vision and really allow your world to open up, and for you to not open up just for yourself, but for all these other women who can then influence the circles they live and play and work in a different way. What a gift out of the rubble of such tragedy.
Thank you.
So what are some of the tools that you use to help clients kind of assess, or maybe have them look at their time or use their time differently to energize and support them in that kind of and paradigm?
So I think time is perhaps, you know, our most valuable asset, but managing it effectively is quite a challenge, something that I think we all struggle with. And what I mean by managing effectively is that we are essentially aligning our priorities with how we actually spend our time. So, you know, we know that whatever we put our attention on grows. So if I want to, let's say, strengthen the relationship with my mom, then I need to put the time for it. If I want to get fit, then I need to carve out time and put it on my schedule. Otherwise, it won't work. But the problem is that many times we find ourselves spending time on activities that don't align with our priorities, like mindlessly scrolling through social media or attending obligatory social gatherings that we're not interested, or even just ruminating, you know, with our thoughts. But we can find the ways to regain control over our time. And this is the work that I try to do with the clients. So when I work with my clients, we usually start by identify their current priorities. You know, what are their priorities in life right now? If it's spending time with family or pursuing a career or furthering education or settling down in a new location or finding a partner for life, you know, it's for each one, it's different. And not only it's different for each one, but even for ourselves, this changes over time. So it's really recommended to revisit and update this list, you know, periodically, because life is dynamic. And then we examine their daily and weekly schedule to see how much time they spend on each priority. And then from there, after we mapped, you know, their time, we discuss, if needed, what gradual adjustments we can make to ensure that the amount of time they spend aligns with their priorities. So it's all about taking those small steps rather than big, you know, radical steps to see that eventually they have their priorities aligned with how much time they spend on it. But the thing is that sometimes we have some constraints, such as fixed working hours, which is something that we cannot change. So what do we do in these cases? So then we find alternative strategies to priorities, important aspects. For example, family time can be prioritized by focusing on the quality of time. So being fully present and being engaged. And, you know, disconnecting from the screens and fostering meaningful interactions in the short time that you have together. Or another example could be if someone wants to improve his fitness, but he doesn't have the time to go to the gym to do that because of, you know, working hours. So we explore how we can integrate more frequent bursts of exercises in his daily routine rather than going for an hour to the gym. So it could be like a 15-minute exercises that he can squeeze, you know, here and there to eventually get him the same effect. So the key is to be mindful of our time and manage it instead of letting it dictate our lives.
I always find that such an eye-opening awareness for people, that self-awareness of actually what's happening and how they're spending their time. With type C, I often see that there's just no time on the calendar for them as individuals. And I was working with one client and she said, okay, I'm going to schedule 30 minutes every other day just to reset myself so I can be mindful or present in relationships. And I said, did you put it on your calendar? And she said, oh no, it's a shared family calendar. I can't put it on my calendar. And at first I was almost going to collude with her and say, well, what could you call it that would make you feel comfortable? And then I stopped and I said, what is stopping you from declaring that you're important? And she just started sobbing. And I thought, wow, you know, to take 30 minutes for yourself, not even to do anything, just really just to get your mind clear. And I tried to redirect and see the influence that that had in the other people, that in her family, and doing it that way because of that other's focus, she could see it clearly from that perspective of, oh, that's right. I am more present for my kids when they get off the bus. I am more present with my husband if I take those 30 minutes. So really attaching those little micro moments to how it's making you feel in that moment was a powerful connection for her. But it's so quick to just say, okay, let's call it something else. Let's say that you're doing your taxes. Give yourself permission.
Yeah, but it is quite astonishing to see how many people are just not capable of doing that.
You know, right.
How much they're feeling uncomfortable and you know, that maybe it's wrong or I don't know.
Yeah, a lifetime of keeping themselves safe in some way. Type C coping is also seen as extreme selflessness. And for me, it came up out in this like, oh, she's really kind. And I was kind to everybody, but I was not kind to myself. So the quality of caring, you know, selflessness is the quality of caring more about what other people need and about what other people want than what you yourself needs and wants. And Temeshak's research shows that chronically suppressing needs and feelings to accommodate others actually weakens our immune system. It can show in very different ways, but her research showed it can cause cancer because your immune system is running amok and you're leaving yourself more vulnerable. So self-care is a requirement. And I'm just wondering if you could give us a definition of self-care and why is it important and why should we really be more intentional in this area?
Yeah, so in positive psychology, self-care is viewed as a crucial aspect of well-being and flourishing. It involves intentional actions and practices that we undertake to nurture and maintain our physical, our emotional, and mental health. Positive psychology also emphasizes the importance of self-care in fostering positive emotions, resilience, and overall life satisfaction. So there is a lot that is coming with it. And Tal Ben-Shahar, in his book Happier, introduced the term boosters of happiness, also referred to as MVIs, minimum viable interventions. These are really, really short activities that could last from a few seconds to a few hours, providing purpose, enjoyment, and recharging us with energy. Their contribution to our mental health is both immediate, you know, once we do that, but also long-term. As you mentioned before, that neglecting this could cause, you know, diseases. So that could also be a benefit for the long-term. Now, each one of us has different, you know, preferences regarding to what can recharge us. For me, it could be yoga. It could be, you know, cuddling with my son, taking a warm bath, walking in the woods or on the beach. But for you, it could be something like cooking or playing with your dog or playing an instrument or just listening to music. You know, it varies from one person to another according to our preferences and, you know, the situation and what we need in this time. But what is truly incredible is that self-care activities, they act like a beacon in the darkness. So you really don't need a lot. Like, just like, a single flame can light up an entire space. It only takes like a couple of self-care activities to really transform your well-being, your life satisfaction, your entire state. It was even proven that a 30-second breathing break from work made a difference in well-being, in productivity, in creativity, in overall satisfaction once it was done consistently every couple of hours. 30 seconds of breathing. I mean, it's incredible. It's anyone can do that.
Right. It doesn't cost a thing.
Exactly. It's within our reach. It's, you know, sometimes it's mind-blowing how simple it is, and yet we don't do that. You know?
Right.
But many of us believe that stress is really what is draining us and leading us to burnout and physical disease. But the truth is that it's not stress. It's the lack of recovery. This is the real problem in our culture, because stress is something that humankind was used to deal with, you know, from the beginning of humanity. And in fact, we're actually quite good with dealing with stress. If we look, each one of us, on our daily, you know, routines, how many things we deal with that are stressful, and we don't even pay attention to it anymore because we're used to it. The problem is, and the difference between nowadays and the old time, is that we take on too much without leaving ourselves the time to recover, to recharge. And this is where self-care comes in, because self-care in these situations can make the difference between burnout or anti-fragility, which is flourishing resulting from a stressful situation. So those small, simple daily activities can make a huge difference in our lives.
Wow, you just made that self-care door a little lighter to open. I never really thought about that as, you know, there's so much hyper-focus on the stress and reduced stress, but really, if we start focusing on that recovery time, because it's really I don't know who started the rumor that life isn't supposed to be stressful or you're not supposed to have challenges in your life. That is how we grow as humans, when we can overcome these things. But we have a battalion of things right inside of us that your breath is, that's remarkable. Just 30 seconds of mindful connection to your own body can make all the difference in the world. Wow.
Exactly. And not only that, life is not supposed to be without stress, but the stress, most of the times we cannot control, you know, it's not in our hands, but the recharge and the self-care, it's within our hands. This is what we can control. And so, you know, the tougher it gets, the more self-care we need, because we need to balance. Mm-hmm. And what usually happens is the opposite. The more stressed we are, we say, oh, I don't have time. I don't have those 15 minutes to meditate right now. I don't have the 5 minutes, you know, to sit with my child, because I need to reply to those emails that just arrived. But the truth is that the more stressed we are, the more we need to be mindful and pay attention and give more to ourselves in order to balance this, you know, stressful events or whatever is going on.
I hear so much agency in what you're saying. It's really taking back your own self-efficacy that you don't realize that you're giving away all day long. We had a cabin years ago when I was working in the corporate America, just running around like a chicken with my head cut off with two little kids. And we would get up to Maine and I would try to like make up for all the lost time of the week. So I had this basket where when you entered the cabin, you had to put your cell phone. They weren't allowed there. My sons would bring their friends up and they had to put their cell phone, which was like, you know, removing an arm from a 13-year-old. So, but the most redeeming thing was this weekend, my son, who's now 28, came with his girlfriend for dinner. And he said, I think we need to bring back the phone basket. And I thought, wow, this is not full circle. And he said, you know, I go out with my friends and everybody's on their phone and nobody's present. And I feel like we just need to have a phone basket again. And it's so important for these downtimes of when you really do want to connect with another human, because that's where the flourishing happens, when you can be in a present with another human being. It's just remarkable what can happen.
Indeed. I agree. I totally agree.
So this self-awareness, which you and I are in the business of self-awareness and hopefully urging some consistent effort, one of the foundational models that both of us learned is called the SPIRE model. Could you share with us a summary of SPIRE? And then you had the great idea of maybe doing a little role playing here where I would be a client and explain how you use that tool.
Yeah, gladly. So the SPIRE is a model developed by Tal Ben-Shahar and colleagues from the Whole Being Institute, based on the belief that in order to reach happiness, you need to look at the whole person and address the 5 components that make up for a whole person's well-being. And this is the SPIRE is their acronym. So the S is the spiritual well-being, which is about leading a meaningful life, having a sense of purpose, and about experiencing life in the present moment. So what you just mentioned with, you know, putting away the cell phones, for example. The P is the physical dimension. So this is about caring for the body, whether it's, you know, maintaining an exercise routine, healthy nutrition, having good sleep, etc. But also tapping into the mind-body connection, which is a very strong thing to do. The I, the intellectual well-being, means leading a full and fulfilling life, engaging in deep learning, and also having a sense of curiosity and openness towards new experiences. The R, the relational component, is about nurturing constructive relationships with ourselves, but also with others. In fact, the quality of our relationship is the number one predictor for happiness and resilience. So that's also a good reason why we should put the phones away and, you know, be focused on creating the relationship with the person in front of us, because that's really important for our resilience and happiness. And finally, the E is the emotional component, which means allowing ourselves to feel all emotions, positive and negative, and be resilient to the negative ones. So each of the five components, the spiritual, the physical, the intellectual, the relational, and the emotional, is equally essential for our well-being and happiness. If one is missing, then the whole is affected. And the beauty of this model is that it not only gives us a wider perspective of well-being, but also serves as a practical tool. So by using it, you can easily evaluate your current state and identify the areas where you can incorporate more of the Spire elements into your lives. So if you would like to be the client now, not to make it too long, maybe we can choose just one element to focus on. What would you like that to be?
I would like that to be spiritual.
Spiritual. Okay, so we have a three-step method called ascribe, describe, and prescribe. So the first step is ascribing, rating these elements between 1 and 10, with 1 being the lowest, not at all, to 10 being, you know, extremely the highest. So if you look at your spiritual element, what rate would you give it?
I think I would be a 7.
A 7. Okay, so now we move to the next step, which is the describe. And I would like you to tell me, what are the reasons that you chose the number 7 for your spiritual element?
I'm in the midst of kind of transitioning my client base from working with cancer survivors to working with people who can see themselves in this type C personality, you know, really highly achieving. I'm focusing on women, but highly achieving women who are good at whatever it is that is controlling them, but are feeling like they're losing themselves in the process. So, and it brings me great meaning, because it's kind of connecting me to an old version of me. I spent 25 years in the investment world, and when I retired, I kind of cut it, and I felt very separated from any meaning and purpose when that happened. You know, my whole world was kind of, and it also coincided with the end of my marriage and my son's leaving for college. So it was this, I don't know who I am in this moment, and I don't know what my meaning and purpose is. So I can see it now. It's very clear to me. So that's why I give it a 7. But I'm still, it feels a little, I'm not there yet.
Okay. First of all, sounds like you went through a lot at the same time, and, you know, finding your purpose and your meaning, and you're doing an amazing and super important work. So I think this is a great thing that you were able to achieve. So well done for you. And my question to you is, now that you have described the reason for the 7, what would you prescribe for yourself to maybe move from a 7 to 7.5 or to an 8? What would that look like for you? What small steps can you take to make this progress?
It's very interesting, because I got this new 90-day, I usually use, I've used the same calendar probably for the last 10 years, but this calendar has you identify 3 goals for a 90-day period. And then, like you were saying earlier with that time management, if my goal is to clarify my niche or clear, then the activities in my day should align with this goal. And so I did a lot of work in this calendar in December, kind of setting myself up for the new year. And then kind of got sidetracked and went back to my old calendar where I started with my gratitude practice. And then I didn't have time to pay attention. So I think to get myself to 7.5 would be an invitation for me to look at the work that I've already done, setting up a very clear goals for my purpose and meaning, and then, you know, sticking that time management piece to it and aligning it with that effort.
That makes a lot of sense. And it sounds like you can take all the good work that you already, and all the time that you already put, as you said, on December, and bring it value again after you put it aside for a moment. You know, maybe you were overwhelmed by it. Maybe it's just old habits. You know, who knows? We all have these things around us. It's never easy to, you know, go on a different path than what we're used to. But this sounds like something that makes a lot of sense. Do you feel like you can commit to this action?
I actually do. It's sitting right here on my left, which is so interesting. Maybe that's why I came up with the spiritual. But this is the awareness of it, bringing it back up into my awareness is really helpful.
So good luck with that.
Thank you, Eleanor. I will send you a note at the end of the week when I fulfill 1 week of paying attention to my new calendar system.
Great. I'll be looking forward to receiving this.
Thank you. So that was just a beautiful way of how positive psychology can be used, even in that. And I've been doing this for years. So I tend to steer away from the self-deprecating statements that I used to have, you know, that might have been more of a, I'm a 2 because I suck and yeah. I started this and I gave it up. So to your point, these small increments, they do grow. And me being able to say that was a 7, like that's kind of a big deal in the world of me over these last 7 years of immersing myself in positive psychology, but it does work. And that leads me to this idea of, you mentioned Tal Ben-Shahar, and I saw him speak at a World Happiness Summit in 2020, or maybe it was 2019. And he talked about this idea of being self-full. And I remember just sitting in the audience thinking, wow, this is kind of remarkable. You know, I want to give to other people and my happiness matters. And as a human, I can be both selfish and selfless. And he shared a quote during that, which I wrote down and I had for a long time. I had it on my computer. Caring for others based on your sacrifice doesn't last. Caring must also feed you. And that was a quote from the Dalai Lama. And I thought, wow, okay, so no one goes without if I care about myself.
Exactly.
So what does it mean to you to be self-full?
Yeah, so before explaining the concept of self-fullness, which you already touched upon, I want to spotlight a modern life conception, or actually misconception, that leads us to believe that taking care of ourselves is somehow wrong or selfish. Mm-hmm. You're expected to take care of everyone and everything. If it's our kids, our partner, maybe our parents, our work, the house, you know, the list goes on. And so our culture has created this unhealthy distinction between selfishness and selflessness. And we're led to believe that they are opposites, that either we're taking care of ourselves and then we're selfish, or we're selfless and then putting others before us. But that's not true, as you already mentioned. And indeed, Tal Ben-Shahar challenged this thinking by introducing the term selffulness with the idea of and not or. So selffulness synthesizes the best of both worlds of selfishness and selflessness. It means doing things that contribute to our own happiness and at the same time, doing things that contribute to others' happiness. Mm. Now, many times people are worried that it might affect their performance. You know, if I'm taking care of myself, then maybe I'm not doing as good, you know, at my work or in other areas, I don't know, sports, whatever it may be. But there's an interesting research done by Adam Grant that showed that successful people are big givers, and not only for others, also for themselves. So this is the idea of selffulness. It's just, it's not neither or, it's actually both that work together and even strengthening one another, I would say.
It's such a beautiful concept. And we all know that idea of putting on your mask first in an airplane. And I think we've come so disconnected with what that mask actually means. Like, putting that mask actually is giving yourself air or allowing yourself to breathe. And without you being able to breathe in your own life, you can't give anybody else air around you. And that is of mind, body, spirit. You just shut down and there's no room for anybody. And I think you mentioned this when I saw you talk in another venue, that when we don't take care of ourselves and our cup is empty and others are asking more of us, there starts to be this element of resentment, which is, I can't help when I think about that word resentment, I can't help but think of the word cement. Like it just holds you frozen in time and in space to be able to interact with other people, because they're asking you with an empty cup, you've got nothing to give. So you start resenting them for even asking. It's just this very tumultuous circle that you can get stuck in when selffulness is not on the center of your radar.
True, exactly true. And, you know, this is what I try to emphasize when I work with clients that are just, they cannot bear the thought of doing something for themselves, you know, when they have, especially women, you know, being moms, having young children, working full-time, you know, jobs. They say to me, how can I even think about it? There are always a million other things that I need to do, but I really try to emphasize that, you know, sometimes I try to speak to them, to the sake of the children even, and explain that taking care of yourself is actually taking care of your children, is actually being a better worker at your work, because you have more to bring to each, you know, to wherever you're going. If it's going home, and then, you know, you can be more present with your kids. If it's going to work, and you can be more productive and be more focused. But if you're constantly empty, exhausted, feeling, you know, this resentment that you mentioned, how can you show up at your best? You would never be able to do that. Mm-mm. So sometimes when people cannot hear, you know, that they're doing something for their own sake, then I need to bring it, you know, through the benefit of others and try to convince them, you know, to do that from maybe for this.
Mm. Yes. And one of my favorite tools that I'm sure you use extensively as well is self-compassion, to assist in that self-care practice and becoming selfful. And the work of Kristen Neff, she describes self-compassion as it involves acting the same way towards yourself when you're having a difficult time, or if you fail or notice something you don't like about yourself, instead of just ignoring your pain with a stiff upper lip, you can actually stop and tell yourself, this is really difficult right now. And how can I comfort and care for myself in this moment as if it was a friend that I would certainly stop and comfort and care for? Do you work with Kristen Neff's stuff with self-compassion?
Yes, of course. That's always, you know, quite an essential component for doing this kind of work. And it's really helping people to turn this compassion inward because people are compassionate to others, as you said, to a good friend, to a spouse, to their children, of course. You know, if they see their child fails, they would not be critical to him. You know, they would try to show him, you know, that it's okay, that it happens to everyone. You're not alone. This is, you know, part of our human experience. They would comfort him. They would maybe, you know, treat him with something that will make him feel better, that will uplift him. All those things that once it comes to themselves, they forget about. So I try to teach them, you know, to really stop and pay attention, first of all, and to really listen to what's going on, to their emotions, to what their emotions are telling them, to pay attention to this pain that they are feeling, you know, right now, not ignore it or try to, you know, put it aside or I don't have time to deal with it. And even just paying attention to your pain instead of ignoring it is already an act of self-care. Mm-hmm. That's already the first step that you can do, you know, to make things better for yourself and treat yourself better. So it's about taking the time to acknowledge what is going on. And, you know, and as you said, ask yourself, you know, what do I need right now? What can make me feel better? And take the action to do that, whatever it may be. You know, go prepare yourself a cup of tea. Go take a walk with your dog. Call some friends, you know, or a parent, whatever can uplift and make you feel better in this moment is a self-care and what is even called as a self-compassion break. Mm. So when you're feeling overwhelmed, struggling, noticing even a self, you know, a negative self-talk that starts within you, try to be aware, try to stop the cycle, and just take this self-compassion break and do something to make yourself feel better.
Mm. I love the idea of a self-compassion break. And again, a type C coping is to really suppress those feelings and, you know, power on. And so they stay in their head. And I love Kristen Neff's. She has kind of these three elements of compassion that really helps people who suppress emotions wedge themselves into that self-compassion break, where that first level, just like you said, is just being warm and understanding towards ourselves and understand we all suffer. We all fail. We're human. Permission to be human, rather than ignore the pain or filling ourselves or our mind chatter with that criticism. And that idea, you know, her second element is recognizing the humanity in it all, because I think we can stay so isolated, which is so dangerous on so many levels. So I love the examples that you gave. A self-compassion break, pick up the phone and connect with another human. They know that, you know, they are another human, and they don't want you to suffer, and you don't need to suffer alone, which is such an important, and that's what I see that you did with that group of women who were all probably suffering silently in their own homes, but to come together and unite and just emit positive emotions and feelings and have a safe place to explore what was happening in this, or try to make meaning out of this horrible thing happening in the world, so you can get it out of your body. And her third element to that same point is, we can't ignore our pain and feel compassion for it at the same time. So finding those safe places where you can share your pain out loud just for somebody to hold it. And that's what I love about being a coach. Sometimes people share things with me that they've never said out loud before. And it's such a gift to give to people, just to hear themselves get it out of their head or out of their body. It's so stunning. And the one thing that you also shared in your presentation, again, a quote that I had not seen before by Maya Angelou: as you grow older, you will discover that you have two hands, one for helping yourself and the other is for helping others.
Yeah, so beautiful.
Such powerful work. This has been so extraordinary. I can't wait to share this with the people that have ears to hear this. I have one question, final question that I would love to ask you. It's become kind of a signature to the to the Investment of Self podcast. If I were to crush you up and put your essence in pill form, what effect would you have on someone taking that pill?
Well, first of all, I just have to say it's a fantastic question. I love it. I think I'm going to start using it as well with my clients, because I think it really gets you thinking. You know, it got me really thinking for quite a bit. And I even reached out to some close people around me to ask them, you know, what they would say.
Brilliant.
About me, because, you know, what would be their take on it? Because I was really curious. It's really thought provoking. So I think eventually that taking the Eleanor pill would give people perspective, the ability to see things from different angles and, you know, gain more clarity. But it has to be also combined with hope. This ability to imagine a better future and keep growing, even in the most challenging times. And I think these are the main values that I really try to bring with my work to my clients, and also to my, you know, my family, my friends. I think that really is an essential part of my identity.
And I would validate that authenticity in the limited amount of time I've spent with you. I feel that in great form on that. The original thing that I saw you speak on, and then also in your writing, those things come shining through. So thank you for sharing your genius with the world.
Oh, thank you. And I'm so grateful for this invitation, Kathy, and the opportunity to bring to your audience these ideas and these tools and be part of this great work that you're doing with bringing all this goodness. You know, to so many people and women worldwide. So thank you.
And all of your contact information will be in the show notes. And the beauty of the world we live in, although we all want to put our phones in the phone basket, we still have technology. So you can have a coach in the Netherlands if Eleanor is resonating with you. And I hope that happens. Thank you so much for your time. Such a gift.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your gift of time and for tuning into the Investment of Self Type C Transformation Podcast. Make sure to check out the show notes for this episode at kathywashburn.net/podcast, and give us a follow on Instagram at kathywashburn.net. If you liked this episode, make sure to follow Investment of Self Type C Transformation. And if you feel so moved, I would love a review. We'll be back soon with more. Until then, I wish you well.